Brooke, thank you so much for being a part of Galesburg Live this morning. It's great to have you back.
Thank you very much for having me.
You know, there may be some folks out there who are not really familiar with your organization. Why don't we start with talking about just what your group does?
Well, I'm the executive director of the Knox County Child Advocacy Center and Paladin Children's Center. We have the name to be inclusive of both Knox County, Warren, and Henderson counties. We work with everyone to make sure that children are safe. And so what that means is that we work with investigators through law enforcement and DCFS, so the Department of Children and Family Services, to aid in child abuse investigations. So what that means for us, we have a cozy office. We make it comfortable. We have toys. We have couches. We encourage the families to come and feel like they're at a comfortable place. Mm-hmm. And then what we do is to talk to a child who someone's concerned about. If the child has made some sort of disclosure at school or at a doctor's office or at home and the investigators need more information, instead of going to a police station or to a DCFS office, they come to our office and we talk with them about what happened. So we don't know that much. We start from scratch and we ask the child what they know.
Right. So are you the first call that's made, or where do they come to you from? Is it just the parent calls you, the teacher calls you? I mean, where are they coming from? Or is the police?
Right. We get our referrals directly from law enforcement.
From law enforcement. Okay.
Or DCFS.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. So, Knox County is, and Warren County, you know, we're small town Midwest. We don't want to believe that this is a problem in our area, but it really is.
Yes,
still.
It is.
And growing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Our last fiscal year, we had 132 cases, and over 90 of them were from Knox County. So this is very much a problem within our county.
Right. And ages?
Anywhere from 3 to 18 are the ages that we cover. But lately, we've also had a couple two-year-olds. I mean, we want to see if we can get any information to try to help protect children and keep them safe. We have great staff. We have Amanda Giles as our advocate and case manager. She works with the families. We have a new MDT coordinator, Samantha Weick. She is going to be a forensic interviewer after she goes through training in October. So we have paid staff that work under grants to make sure that victims of child abuse and their families have support going through this process, because police are busy. DCFS investigators are busy. And it's sad that they're as busy as they are, but they have a lot of different types of cases that they handle. We specialize in child sexual abuse and severe physical abuse, so we can be there for those families. And I believe right now we have at least 61 open cases. So we're actively working with 61 families between Knox, Warren, and Henderson counties to make sure that they have things like case management, they have referrals if they need food banks, if they need information on protection orders, if they need anything in the community. Well, we stay in touch with the Human Services Councils and make sure that they know what's available in the community. We also do court advocacy and make sure that they know where things are going throughout the process of the courts, and also update them on the status of their investigation. So we keep up with all those families because it's so important that they know what's going on in their case.
It's shocking to hear the number that we have here in this area. And is there a demographic? Is there an age that is more susceptible to this? I mean,
not really.
No,
and that's the horrible part, is that it touches every socioeconomic class, all races, all genders. It really does affect everyone in our community. And even if it hasn't happened to you, it's happened to probably someone you know. Mm-hmm. It's all throughout our community, and it's things that people don't necessarily want to talk about. But the important part is to start talking about it.
That's right. And especially because we're dealing with much of this abuse is coming from within the family, and it's usually someone that they know.
Absolutely. It's over 90% of perpetrators are people that the children know. So it could be a family member. Oftentimes it is some sort of family member or some sort of incest case. It can be grandparents. It could be cousins. It could be family friends. It could be acquaintances. It could be people that come over for a cookout. It could be anybody. And especially people that children know and maybe have been grooming or talking to for years.
Brooke, again, thank you so much for joining us today on Galesburg Live. If I'm mistaken, you're an attorney.
Yes.
Right. So how did you get into this line of work, into this career that you have right now?
In law school, I actually started work at an adoption law program at Capital Law University. So I had a great start working with kids, and I wanted to continue doing that. My path took me in a little bit of a different direction at first. I was a prosecutor for a year, and then I moved on to Iowa Legal Aid, and I worked in Iowa for about 10 years at Legal Aid. It was rewarding work at times, but I kept seeing the children get in the middle and not getting the help they needed, because really what we did there was to represent adults. So I was looking for something. I'd always wanted to work for a nonprofit organization. And when this opportunity came up, I couldn't turn it down. It was just, it looked like exactly the type of work I wanted to do. And I've actually filed something on behalf of one of our families at one point to protect them. So it does come in handy to have the law degree and to be able to work with the prosecutors in the counties and make sure that we advocate for them. As well as to try to help protect everyone.
That's right. And since I learned of the organization, again, many people in this area have no idea that this organization is here or that it's even needed. We're just kind of blind to all of this. And when I first learned about your organization working with the United Way, I thought these people are superheroes. They really are. They're not wearing capes. They're not with the big S on their chest. They are behind the scenes working through the legal system and really doing the work to protect the kids here in this area. And we were talking earlier about the number of children in our community that are affected by sexual abuse, by physical abuse. There have got to be signs to look for. If there's a child in our life, what are some things that we should be looking for that can tell us that there's trouble?
Well, they're a little bit different for sexual and physical abuse, so I'll go through the sexual abuse signs first. Generally, what you're looking for is a mood change. So the child acts differently. There's either severe mood swings, sometimes deep depression, sometimes an extroverted child will become an introverted child, or the other way around. Something will change. You'll notice behavior being different. You'll maybe notice that, some children become very, very closed off. Other children may become a little more promiscuous, not knowing where the boundaries are now that the boundaries have been blurred. Sometimes the children will talk about things that don't quite maybe make sense to adults, or they'll talk about terms that aren't quite clear. So maybe calling body parts certain names that someone else has called them, but they're not the correct names for those body parts. So you may not understand exactly what they're talking about. So it's important to question that and really understand. Or maybe there's an aversion to certain types of people or a certain person in their life. Maybe they suddenly don't want to go to a certain person's house anymore. They don't want to go to a friend's house anymore. They don't want to be around a certain family member anymore, or it's more difficult to get them to that family member. There could also be changes in grades. There could be changes at school. Certainly, if there's acting up type of behavior, it's important to get to the bottom of that and find out what that is. So then for physical abuse, you may see actual signs of those physical abuse. So things like bruises and cuts and welts and scars and burns, things like that. If they're unexplained or the explanation doesn't make sense, it's important to look into that more and find out more about where that came from.
And the kids, the children, they most of the time they don't want to talk about this at all. It's hard to get them to
absolutely
open up.
Yeah. Especially when it's, well, sometimes, and sometimes it's normal behavior. It's been normalized with them to such an extent that they don't realize it's wrong, especially in the younger kids, where if that's the way they've been raised, how do they know any different?
Sure.
Or they love the person so much. If it's mom or dad, I mean, how are you going to explain to a child that what they're doing is wrong when they're 3 years old and acting out in sexual ways and talking about things mom and dad are doing, not realizing it's wrong? So it really depends on the situation. But sometimes there is fear involved. Other times there's, fear of retaliation, fear of change in the household, fear that the finances are reliant on this person. And without that person, there's no money in the house. What are you going to do without that? Pressure from family that either don't believe them or think that there will be severe consequences to the whole family if word gets out, or worried about reputation. There's a lot of pressure on these kids, and they're just kids. Yeah. I mean, it's hard enough for an adult to talk about their most recent sexual experience, even if it was a positive one. But you talk to a child about that, it's a whole different situation, which is why we're trained in how to talk to kids and really to try to bring that out in a way that's not scary and that's, okay for them to talk, to let them know they're not in any trouble. We're just here to try to help make them safe.
Brooke, thank you again for being a part of Galesburg Live. It's great to have you back.
Thank you.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about the signs of sexual and physical abuse you look for in children in your life. And those kids could be, you know, whether you're a youth leader at church, maybe you're a teacher, or you just have a neighbor that you notice these signs in the kids. And like you said, behavioral changes and grades, and there's all those things. So I've noticed, so let's say I'm an adult that has noticed some changes in the children in my life, in my world. I've noticed something. What do I do? I think the first instinct would be to confront that person that I think is, you know, harming this child.
And that's probably the worst thing you could do. Absolutely, you want to focus on the child. The first thing to do is to focus on the well-being and safety of the child. So talking to the child about their safety. Do they feel safe? Are they okay? Do they need any, if you see marks on a child, you know, does that still hurt? Do you need help? Focus on their well-being, because the more questions you ask about the actual incident, the more you're going to muddy up any type of criminal investigation. So it's important to focus just on the well-being of the child. Certainly report what's going on. If you see marks on a child, if you see something, report it to law enforcement. Call law enforcement. Make a report there. Call the DCFS hotline. Make a report there. DCFS hotline only gets involved if it's either a family member, so a household member, or a caretaker. So if it's somebody, you know, little kid down the street comes over and hits somebody with a hard object, that's not necessarily a DCFS case. That's more of a law enforcement case. Yeah. So, but if you think it, you know, if the child is saying, you know, somebody at home is hurting me, well, then, you know, it's a household member, calling DCFS would be appropriate. So, okay. Certainly if the hotline turns you down because they don't think it meets their criteria, then call law enforcement or start with law enforcement, because they may get involved no matter what. But make the report, make sure that the child is safe. Those are the two things for anyone who sees something going on to do. Because the very first thing is to keep the child safe no matter what. Police can do that. That's their job, is to keep people safe. So, and they can also, you know, help with services and arranging an interview with us if that becomes the appropriate next step. Maybe removing the household member from the household to make them safe inside, you know, things like that. So if a criminal case is filed, there can be a no contact order to keep the perpetrator away from the child. So there's all sorts of things that can happen, but only if the investigator has all the information they need. And if they have a lot of people getting involved or beating up on people, that blows the whole thing up and makes it so much more difficult on the child. Because if we think about this as victim centric, if we're looking at this from the victim's point of view, how scary is it for somebody that you know to now be in trouble with other people and getting beat up or getting threats of harm or having guns pulled? We don't want to do anything like that, because that harms the child more than the original incident has. So focusing on making sure that the child's safe, you know, making the report to law enforcement and supporting that child through whatever happens next, whether there's a conviction or not, whether there's court action or not, you want to support the child and make that child feel safe.
Wow. Yes, absolutely. It's such an emotional thing. Such a anger, the disgust and hate, and just, I could just see, I'm sure you run into situations that have gone very badly because
absolutely.
Of that.
Absolutely. But the important thing is that we focus with the families on whatever happened has happened. We need to move on in a way that's going to help this child.
Wow.
We have to come together as a community and use all of that hatred, use all of that disgust for something better. You know, use it to teach your children about their bodies and that there are certain parts of their bodies that are private and should not be touched, so that it doesn't happen to someone else. Use that knowledge, use all of that pent-up aggression and anger to use it in a positive way and help other children be safe.
Well, I told you they're superheroes. It's Brooke Chesney, Executive Director of the Knox County Child Advocacy Center, Paladin Children's Center.
That's correct.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Here in Knox, Warren, and it's just...
And Henderson.
And Henderson County, our guest in the first hour of Galesburg Live. And let's talk about that. Let's get back to that communication, because there's so many things that we should be talking to the young people in our life, whether it's a child, grandchild, niece, nephew, Cub Scout leader or whatever. You know, you have an opportunity to impress upon these young people that there are things that that they should be looking out for. And one of those things is grooming and how they dress. And that's something we should be talking to our kids about.
Absolutely. Grooming behaviors are the scariest things you will ever maybe not see. Mm-hmm. Grooming behaviors by adults are very subtle at first. It will look like an adult is just interested in a child and they're being supportive and they're maybe taking the child out and going to ice cream or maybe taking the child to special things that no one else does with them. It could be a person that either inserts themselves into that child's life as a friend of the family, or it could be a relative that just steps in because maybe things are a little rocky at home for whatever reason. It could be, you know, divorcing parents and, you know, child is left at various relatives' placements while you know, school's out and right. Summertime and parents working, or it could be anything. But if there's someone in your life or something that you're seeing, maybe it's a neighbor, maybe it's a youth group leader, maybe it's, you know, somebody, a pastor. I mean, you never know who it's going to be. Right. So I'm giving lots of different examples, nothing in specific, but, it's important to watch for extra special attention to a particular child where gifts are purchased, where certain experiences are purchased for that child, where that child is going with that person alone, where that child has a lot of alone time with a particular adult. Yeah. That's usually not a good sign. There's something off there and boundaries need to be created.
Yeah.
So when those grooming behaviors are seen, the next step is then to really figure out where those boundaries belong. So if the child is spending a lot of time going on different trips with someone, well, maybe that's not a good idea anymore. Maybe the parent then says, you know, I don't think this is appropriate. If you're going to see this child, it should be in our home while we're there, or it should be, you know, at a community event where we're present or where other people are present, but in the public eye, not in a private room. I mean, there's certain boundaries you can put in place if you see those behaviors starting. But certainly, you know, it's not just the stranger with offering the ice cream or something like that. It's
That's
people that
cliched.
We know.
Yes, right.
You know,
right.
Is there stranger danger? Sure.
Yes.
The internet is filled with people that our children don't know that are looking to develop a relationship with them. And we also need to be careful about what our children are watching online and what they're doing online. But, you know, that's a very minor portion of these cases.
Sure. Brooke Chesney, the executive director of the Paladin Children's Center and Knox County Child Advocacy Center. One of the things we were talking about off mic is the hashtags out there, the Me Too movement that... how is this, how is your organization, how does that affect all of this that we're talking about today? It's opened up the conversation about boundaries a lot more than what we've had in the past.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Well, Me Too came when, you know, people were trying to say, look, this is happening in our communities all across the country, probably all across the world. Being strong enough to say Me Too is telling our kids that it's okay for them to tell what happened to them
as
well.
And for somebody who's not familiar with that, the Me Too saying, it's happened to me too. It
absolutely.
Has I've been, you know,
sexually harassed or abused.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that's, it has opened that communication up where we can talk to our kids about this. You had brought up teenagers in the workplace here today.
Absolutely. Yeah. The hashtag Time's Up was a big opening to that conversation as well about how people in the, you know, women in the workplace are also facing inequality, not just on pay anymore, but also on the way that they're treated, and really looking at that way that we're treating people in the workplace. So certainly our teenagers are, especially this time of year when they're heading into summertime and they're getting their summer jobs. I mean, a lot of them are waitresses in retail. They're out in our community. They're out among the public, and treating them with respect is certainly what we all hope for, but it may not always be what happens to them. So we need to talk with them about, you know, reporting those things to their supervisor, not being afraid that they're going to get fired because they were touched by a customer, but simply making sure that they speak up for themselves and stand up for themselves and the right to privacy in their own body.
Absolutely. And the Start Believing hashtag, could you share what that is about?
Absolutely. As I mentioned, April was Sexual Assault Awareness Month as well, and part of that campaign is to make sure that when we start the conversation about, you know, someone saying that they were sexually assaulted or sexually abused at some point, that we start by being open to listening to what they have to say, not immediately calling them an accuser and closing that door on them, but opening up to be supportive to have that open door to them so that they really feel comfortable about talking about their experience. And certainly our office has pledged to start by believing.
That's right. And that's where you, again, it's not, you're looking for the facts. That's what your organization, that's your job.
Absolutely.
Is to look for the facts.
And to be open and allow that child to come to us and feel like they can talk with us. That's our goal, is to be open and listen, and then follow up and be supportive of the family.
Brooke, we've had I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today on Galesburg Live.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
It is it's shocking. But we have to see it as a society, as a community. We have to see this is real, that this is happening. The abuse of children, sexual abuse, physical abuse. It's getting better because of organizations like you and superheroes like you and your team. But it's not going away.
No, it's not.
It's not. And a lot of it really should start with from the home and the parents having those difficult discussions. I've got three kids. You've got children. It's not easy to talk about this stuff. But as you said, we have to talk to our kids about other things that are uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
That's hard to talk about. So
absolutely. I mean,
it's our job.
It is. I mean, the death of a loved one, it's a horrible conversation. The death of a family pet.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to talk to your kids about that. But you have to explain where, you know, your puppy went. You have to explain where, you know, what happened to a loved family member that you're not going to see anymore. I mean, we have horrible diseases like cancer and things that are heart disease that are taking our family members. We have to talk about those hard things. And those things are much more final than this. Yeah. Those are much more difficult conversations in different ways. But certainly we all have our ways of doing things like that. You know, some people have religion and use that to explain what's going on to kids. We have something much more simple when it comes to child sexual abuse and child physical abuse. Okay. We have a system of telling kids your body is your own. Your body is private. And there are only certain rare exceptions to that, especially with older kids. Yeah. You know, doctor, keeping you clean and healthy. Those are the only reasons why anyone should ever be touching private parts of your body. It's done.
Period.
I mean, that's all. It's a difficult conversation to start, but it's super easy to do. And it's so important to let kids know that, A, you support them, that you're telling them that their body is their own, that you then follow through and you don't push them to hug relatives or to give kisses to people. If they're avoiding them, there's probably a reason.
Yeah.
And let them go to the person of their own free will. We want to encourage kids to use their bodies in the way that they think is appropriate and to instill those values into them. We also want to make sure that we're not forcing that affection on them ourselves, that if they don't want to hug today, that's okay. You know, it's their body. If we're going to teach them it's their body, then we need to also follow through and let them make those decisions about their body and not take it personally, because they're still learning. I mean, especially if we're talking about toddlers, they're up and down. One minute, one thing. The next minute, something totally different anyway.
Right.
So, but when we're talking about older kids, you know, if they're not feeling it, we should let them, you know, let that message be clear. Let's not muddy up the waters. Let that message be totally clear to them that their body is their own.
Right. So some of the excuses, I call it an excuse, that people would make for not talking to their kids about these things and boundaries and all that is because I'm afraid I'm going to, you know, take their innocence. I'm going to ruin their innocence by talking about these terrible, horrible things.
Well, and I would say that is absolutely untrue, that you're actually empowering those children to really know that they're not to blame for anything that happens to them, that their body is their own, that, you know, their innocence is much more at risk in not telling them and actually literally losing their innocence, or, you know, just that they know about, you know, that the certain parts of their body that a swimsuit covers. You know, you don't necessarily have to go into the words. It's important for them for investigators' purposes if they're using words that they understand. But
sure,
we have ways to get around that, too. But, you know, encouraging the use of proper terms for body parts is not a bad thing. It's simply educating your child on how to tell that something went wrong. I think there's an example of a little toddler who was using the word cookie and said, well, daddy ate my cookie. Daddy ate my cookie. And nobody knew what she was. They're like, oh, well, we'll just get you another one.
Yeah.
What's the problem? Well, as it turns out, the cookie was a private part.
Mm.
And nobody knew that. So they couldn't get her the help she needed because she didn't have the right words.
Right.
So once somebody knew what she was talking about, then they could get her the help she needed and keep her safe. So that's why it's important. It's really important to give people the tools they need to protect their innocence and actually go through life, hopefully without trauma like this.
That's right. Let's talk boundaries. We're talking with Brooke Chesney, Executive Director of the Knox County Child Advocacy Center, a Paladin Children's Center, Knox, Warren, and Henderson County. Thank you so much for being here. And again, many of the things that we're talking about today, it's uncomfortable to think about it. It's shocking and it's disgusting to think about that this stuff goes on, but it could be going on in your street, maybe in your own family. And if you've been turning a blind eye to it, don't do that anymore. There's help. We have to protect those kids. And many of it starts with boundaries that we're giving our kids. And that's uncomfortable, too, because they don't like boundaries, do they?
Absolutely not. But it's so important.
When it comes to behaviors and the way they dress and all those things. We can help them by giving those boundaries. Yeah,
absolutely. And relationship boundaries. You know, certainly teenagers are going to have raging hormones, and it's a parent's job to try to rein those in as much as they can, but to set those boundaries of, you know, you don't date an adult as a teenager.
We were talking about this off mic. You've been seeing a lot more of this. I mean, I know it's always been going on, but where underage kids are dating older, you know, it doesn't seem like it's that older, but there's a big difference between a 14-year-old and an 18-year-old.
Absolutely.
Or worse. So.
Well, and an 18-year-old is an adult, you know, and as far as the criminal system is concerned, it's illegal to do something like that. The term statutory rape is real, and there's a code section for it in Illinois. So it's important to respect the age difference and focus on, you know, people your own age.
Absolutely. I'm father of a daughter, and we were talking off mic. I won't go into the whole big story with our listeners, but I was not a good I was not a friend to any of the boys that wanted to date my daughter when I was when she was younger in high school. I was absolutely the one in my mind. I was the one person in the entire world. The whole world could be against me between my daughter and the rest of the world. That was my whole being, and I couldn't control it either. I was just. Oh, you know, I was not nice to these young men. I was nice, but they also knew that I meant business. And, you know, and even the instance where her boyfriend at the time turned 18, they wanted to go out on a car date to go see a movie. Seems pretty innocent. Absolutely not. She's 15. That will never happen. I'll take you. I'll pay for the movie. I'll take you to dinner. I'll pick you up, take you back. Be happy to. Are you kidding the parents? Mm. I can't believe that. That's just so old-fashioned. What do you think's going to happen? What do you think's in my head?
Yeah.
So I'm sorry. But there has to be those kind of boundaries.
Absolutely.
I was not popular in my house. But that's hard to do, Brooke.
It is hard to do, but it's so important. Your kids are still developing. Their brains aren't fully developed until they're 25, so... We as parents have to be the people that help them create those boundaries.
So what do you say when your teenager is saying, yeah, but I can wear whatever I want. I can dress however I want.
Well, I'm fully in support of kids making their fashion choices, and they should not be assaulted based on their fashion choices. A victim is never to blame for what happens to him or her.
Of course.
However, you know, having those conversations about protecting your body also encourages respect of a child's own body,
right?
And they're maybe less likely to make those choices.
And of course, the use of these. I'm holding up my smartphone here right now, and it's a powerful tool. It's also a very dangerous tool in the hands of an immature child and a child.
Absolutely,
because people have access to them, and I've heard parents say, "Well," because I say, "Do you check your kids' phones?" I do, because it's my phone. Not your phone, my kids. Mm-hmm. It's my phone, and I want to look at it whenever I want because it's a privilege to have this, and it's a responsibility. But there's parents that go, oh, well, I would never intrude on my child's privacy like that.
Oh, it's their job to intrude, absolutely, because there are so many people in this world that are misusing the internet to do things to lure children into either relationships or make them feel like they're in a relationship or the missing kids that you see on Facebook where people are desperately looking for them. How did they get missing in the first place? They're going to meet somebody. They're going to do something that they were convinced that they should do, but it's not a good idea. So it's That's important. Right. And it's also a place where kids are taking naked photos of themselves and sending to other people, creating child pornography in the in the meantime. So we want to prevent that. We want to stop that before it starts.
We just had a mother talk to us at one of these events that said, my son was in the other room and I picked up his phone, kind of looked at it, and the language that is being used between him and his girlfriend, very sexual in nature, very obscene in nature, and she never had a clue, had no clue that would even come to her son's mind, because he was speaking it, but also this younger girl was saying that too.
Yeah.
We can think all we want that, well, my daughter or my son would never do that.
You don't know until you ask, until you look into it.
That's right.
Kids are learning a lot in this world right now, and it's important to keep up with it.
So we want to wrap this up in a positive way, because everything we're talking about, we're not talking about being these tyrants and just, you know, pushing our kids. That we want them to be happy, positive, productive, safe people, and this is how we can help them do that. And it does help them do that.
It does, absolutely. It's going to increase their self-esteem. It's going to help them understand their bodies and give them more confidence in themselves. It's going to teach them to respect themselves and others and have more compassion for other people and look around them, to be aware around them, not to be staring at their cell phone, but to be looking around them. And if they see abuse in someone else, to report that as well. It's going to give them courage to do the right thing. If they know what the right thing is, a lot of times giving them this education will help them do the right thing. And it's going to increase that parent-child bond, which is what a parent wants. You want your kids to be able to talk to you.
Absolutely.
It will do all of those things.
Oh, Brooke Chesney, our guest in this first hour of Galesburg Live, Executive Director of the Knox County Child Advocacy Center, Paladin Children's Center. Thank you so much for the time you spent today. If someone would like more information, your website has got a lot of wonderful information on it. I would encourage people to go there. What's the website?
It's www.paladin, P-A-L-A-D-I-N, and then the letters C-A-C.org. Mm-hmm. We also offer certainly lectures or information to parent groups or community groups. If you want just information or if you'd like us to come speak, feel free to give us a call at 309-344-8416.
Oh, you definitely need to have Brooke or one of your team speak at your for your organization. It'll open your eyes to, again, I was clueless that this organization even existed until I was introduced to them with my work with the United Way, and it was eye-opening. So, and if someone just wants more information, they can certainly call you and talk. And
absolutely. Okay. If we don't talk to children specifically without that referral, but sure, certainly if they have questions about where to go or what to do, we can certainly point them in the right direction.
Okay. Brooke, thank you so much for spending the time. And
sure.
Thank you and your team for what you do for kids in our community.
Oh, we're happy to help. That's what we're here for. But thank you for having us.